Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Welcome to The Jump, presented by Michelin Wiper Blades.
Today's opening tip, Marcus Morris angrily spiking the basketball last night, and we didn't know if he thought doing the Gronk spike or...
You acting like he's never seen nobody spike the ball like that.
You know where that wouldn't happen? In San Antonio.
Would not. Well, it's because he's not playing in San Antonio, as angrily brought up.
New York.
Why would you try and bring toughness to New York at this point in time?
Someone's got to do it. Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by NBA champion and third place finisher in his middle school hopscotch tournament, Richard Jefferson, Hall of Famer,
why are you laughing at
me? Mr. Tracy McGrady. It is a players mostly edition of The Jump. Brian Windhorst is going to be along later. Also coming up, Ben Simmons suffering a shoulder injury in the Sixers loss last night. Is Philly in trouble if he misses extended time? We will discuss. First, though, so going into last night's game at Staples Center, there was a lot of talk about what wasn't going to happen. Kawhi Leonard wasn't going to play. To protect a knee issue, he's apparently going to be managing for the foreseeable future. So by definition, this wasn't going to be an NBA Finals preview, even if this is the pairing we end up seeing in June. But here's the funny thing. You get two very good basketball teams together, and by the end of the night, the story turns out to be a lot more about what did happen than what didn't. Some of it was just funny. I want you guys to watch Eric Bledsoe here. He's supposedly inbounding, but
I'm telling you, he was watching the Big Three.
This is one of the five.
Summer.
This is one of the five most amazing things I've ever seen in my life.
Bledsoe said, "I got all the way half court." And I'm like,
I've seen thousands of games in my life, and I've never seen this, college included. Where have you ever?
We've actually seen the opposite of this happen before, guys. Remember a few years ago, Russ just did not dribble.
I've
at
seen
all
this before.
Off the inbounds, just walking.
I saw a video of Jay Kidd doing this in college.
I've never witnessed this before.
Basketball is hard, guys. Bledsoe involved in another bizarre moment later in the game. Watch him and Lou Williams here. Now, the call on the floor was an offensive foul on Williams, but watch it from this angle. You can see why Doc Rivers decided to throw the proverbial flag. This is the new coaches challenge system the NBA has implemented this year. And yet somehow, even after the officials looked at this, they still ruled that Williams fouled Bledsoe, which Rivers
was
not
upset.
Happy. Here he is post-game.
Doc was upset.
You have to overturn that. Unless Bledsoe fouled Lou with his face, there was no foul on that play. There was a flop. I think it should have been more of a chance that Bled got a letter from the league about flopping than Bled got fouled. That was awful.
Unless Bledsoe fouled Lou with his face is an amazing quote. Rivers has a right to be upset. Who knows if the course of things really would have changed with the correct call, but the whole incident did happen in the fourth quarter of a game the Clippers only lost by 5 points. Even with the way things played out, it was an impressive outing for L.A. I'm just going to keep saying this. A lot of experts have named the Clippers already as their title favorites, and it's possible we still may be underplaying how good they will be this season, because you will be taking what we saw last night and then adding two of the NBA's top 10 players to that squad. Anyway, back to the Bucks, who have a top player of their own. And indeed, he was the one who powered their win last night.
He's pretty good.
This stat line is absurd, guys. 38 points, 16 rebounds, 9 assists, 2 blocks, and 2 steals. And what's crazier is he's been doing this basically night after night for the past 2 straight weeks. Forget more complicated analytics if you just go by the most basic NBA stat categories. Giannis is the only player to ever have more than 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in his first 8 games.
That's crazy.
Or to put it another way, in the 74-year history of the NBA, a history that spans more than 60,000 games, no other human has ever done this before. What we are watching here is basically the hottest start to an NBA season ever. And make last night more frightening for the rest of the league.
Watch out.
This is
4 three-pointers.
This is scary, man. I'm watching it on television.
Watch out. You start making this, it's
over.
After the game, I was in a hallway chatting with Giannis about his threes. He had no idea that those four trays matched a career high. And when I told him about it, his response was, oh, man, I should have shot more and gone for five. And he's right. Would have been fun if he had broken his personal record. But honestly, enough other stuff did happen last night. It was still plenty of fun. So, T-Mac, are you sold on the Bucks?
What? Been sold on them.
Okay.
To come out of the East, of course, because of that man right there. Mm-hmm. Surrounded by all the shooting that he has. They have a deep bench. They play solid defense. Nobody. Kawhi is not in the East. KD is out this year. I'm super sold on them. I have no worries that these guys will not come out of the East. I'm solid on them.
You're on the boat this year again.
Absolutely. I'm on the boat. They're coming out of the East.
Oh, they're stressed right now. Everyone in Milwaukee is like, damn it, T-Mac picked this. No, I think it's them and Philly. To me, them and Philly are the two best teams. And the thing that they have that Philly doesn't, I feel like, is a closer. If Giannis is knocking down his free throws, if Giannis has the opportunity to knock down these threes, that's something that Philly doesn't have. They don't have that established closer yet. And he has players around him that can close. I do believe Chris Middleton can knock down shots. I do believe they have perimeter shooting around them late in game. You're down by five. You need threes. I don't think that Philly has that.
I'll go even further.
Tell me more.
I told you, if this guy, he's not afraid to take shots, right?
No.
He's coming in the season. He's taking these shots.
Yeah.
If he can continuously hit, knock down threes like this, mid-range shots, I mean, when the defense claps on him, his guys are not making shots, they're going to win a championship.
35%.
They're going to win a championship.
All he needs is 30. Yeah. If he makes 35% of them.
Four of seven free practice.
I think last night was probably, eventually they'll start guarding you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's a greatness there. Like, yes, he can attack like he's LeBron James
but if they start guarding him, that opens up
other things.
A problem.
A problem.
If they start guarding him up top or on the perimeter like that instead of sagging off and he's knocking out, it's over for the league.
To me, the X factor with them is Eric Bledsoe, right? Because he has some games, and I thought he played really well last night, where you're like, that is a point guard on a potentially championship team. And there are some games
nights where he
just
grabs the ball and dribbles up the court.
Yeah, but I don't know what.
Well, that notwithstanding.
They have George Hill, though.
Yeah, they do.
Who's going to be solid every single night, right? So they could count on George Hill. Bledsoe, even if he's not good offensively every night, solid defense.
He's a great defender.
Right. That's all they need from him.
Kyle Korver on your team. There's very few assassins left in this league.
Yeah.
Right? J.J. Redick, Kyle Korver, like those old school assassins that if you put them right there, no one is going to leave them.
No.
He doesn't have to move. He doesn't have to do anything. But if you leave that man, you will be, we're going to sub you out.
Kawhi, of course, missed last night's game. We discussed load management on yesterday's show. But with both of you here, I wanted to ask, I want to put you in the time machine. Do you wish, and I'll start with you, Mac, do you wish load management existed when you played?
Yeah, I mean, I go back to my 4 years that I was in Orlando, and I averaged probably like 40-plus minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think those 4 years, not having Grant Hill and having to do so much for a franchise took a toll on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. But there's no way I was going to take load management when the guys I named yesterday, Kobe or AI, Paul Pierce, Vince, so those guys come into my building. RJ.
Well, I came in with a group of guys, too, so it was like, all these dudes are coming in.
You're so funny.
There's no way I was going to accept load management that night. Absolutely not.
Well, my thing is, again, I didn't have the usage rate of a T-Mac, but I took pride in playing every single game. If you get an opportunity to play in every 82 games, that was something that most NBA players, and I think today it still is. My only issue with load management, and you remember coming into this league, there were one trainer, there was no massage therapist, there was no Normatec, there was no game ready, there was no nothing. You basically had to go out there, strap up your shoes, and go. Now there's five trainers. Mm-hmm. They've eliminated back-to-backs. You don't have 2 days.
They eliminated them.
Or not eliminated, they've reduced them. You don't have as much time on the court. Like that you're getting beat up without the help around you.
Training camp is a lot less. Weekend is extended.
Less.
Like they.
So it's like how much, that's when they talk about shortening the season, I'm like, wait, you don't understand how much has changed towards the players in the last 15, 20 years. That now the takeaway games, you're still going to have load management even if there were 60 games.
Well, yeah, and I do think, Mac, if you had been played a little bit differently and just preserved a little bit more, the knee problems that you had afterward probably would have been different.
For sure.
Fans also obviously frustrated when they pay higher ticket prices for certain games is the way those ticket packages work.
Bundles.
And then maybe not going to get to see the stars that you pay for. I was looking at Tom Haberstroh's story, our old colleague who now works for NBC Sports. He says there's a Silicon Valley company that will actually insure your ticket.
Mm.
So if the star rests for DMP or doesn't has load management, you get your money back. So you can look that up on the internet.
Some people see a problem, other people see an opportunity.
People see a solution. Yeah. This is a former NASA engineer who came up with the algorithm for this. I think that's pretty cool. So there's solutions everywhere. Coming up, we're going to talk about Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce because he said there are no positives, none, to take away from last night's 20-point loss to the Bulls. We'll discuss whether he was being too tough on his team or not.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or miss league.
Oh, I have no idea.
Make. Miss.
It's a make or miss league.
Thanks, Giannis. Make finesse. Ja Morant had a couple really nice finishes, both below the rim.
Ja,
there's something there.
He's making a case for
rookie of the year, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we were sleeping on him. But
now, this is from the other night. He tried to dunk on the Rockets, came down awkwardly, and Russ had a word with him. He's like, let me teach you about barreling to the basket. So do you think that the finishes he had last night, you should credit Russ?
Well, look, understand, too, you saw Russ is bigger than him. Russ is bigger and stronger. You just got to pick your battles. Right? Like, I like that.
Left hand.
Look at awareness, though.
Right?
Yeah. Come on and look at the clock.
Yeah, I like this. This is that. That's his aunt, Lane. Good. He needs to be that Kyrie.
Miss recognition. That's easier said than done. Mike Conley alone on the break waits for the defense to catch up so he can draw the foul.
And
the shot goes in. But he had already turned around and he didn't see it drop. Right? So remember what happened with Von Wafer when he was on the Celtics?
Oh, don't bring, no, Von, right? Von, then he, don't go Von Wafer on Conley. We said Conley was going to be okay, and he's been okay.
Embarrassing right there, man.
Yeah. That's better.
Yeah.
Right? He's
Okay, all right.
Make combos. Joel Embiid gets it on the lower block. Now watch the jab step. Little five, four,
Polk County guy like
three,
that.
Two, one, and then off one leg for the bucket. We might have to take the bar down to watch that game, but
at some point, if I'm the defender, like just shoot the ball, bro.
Right. Yeah. So our producers thought this was like Dirk plus Melo. All together in one.
Well, Dirk had to take time. Dirk, look at that. You can't guard that.
The older he was, the more time he had.
This was just
hit him with it.
Put him in a blender.
Five.
Give him all of it.
Right. If you're going to combine two players.
Hey.
That's tough. Man.
If Embiid does that, he could be the closer.
Make composure. All right. The Hawks got blown out last night, and Atlanta's assistant, Melvin Hunt, got very heated on the sideline. He punched the chair. Now watch Trae Young. He's right next to what happens. Does not even flinch. Does not even, like,
He's flinched. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, this brought up, of course, I got an excuse to show this again.
Matty
I'm going to show it.
But
look at this. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. He's just like, I'm drinking myself.
Hey, man, that man's got cat-like reflexes. He wasn't afraid of that.
Getting on the young boy. Come on, Cam.
I got to say, none of the coaches were happy with their Hawks last night. You know how coaches sometimes try to put a positive spin, right, on a disappointing performance? Hawks coach Lloyd Pierce, after Atlanta lost to the Bulls last night, and they only lost by 20, which we've seen. I'm sorry. We've seen a lot bigger numbers. The Rockets were down 41 points to the Heat the other day.
They were.
This is a young team down, and they lost eventually 113-93, and Coach Pierce did not sugarcoat his feelings. Listen to this.
Coach, it's easy to talk about all the things that you guys did wrong. We saw there were some bright spots tonight, you know, particularly Jabari Park.
No, there wasn't.
Jabari, he had a couple of solid plays, I'd say. I mean, what are some positives that you can take away from this? I mean, I guess it was a bad game, but how do you go moving forward? What are some positives that you do tell this young core?
That the game is over. That's the best thing. I didn't know how to speed the game up. He called two timeouts in the fourth quarter. I'm looking at him like, well, you don't need to sub. Just let it go. Somebody's going to foul in the next couple seconds. That's the positive. This game is over, and we don't have to worry about it anymore. Sometimes there's no positives. You had 18 points, Jabari. He had 18 points last night. We won. We had 18 points tonight. Easy. That's easy. He can do that in his sleep. There's no positives.
Mac, I'm supposed to ask you if one of your former coaches ever did something like this, but you had both Doc Rivers and Jeff Van Gundy, so I'm going to bet yes.
Of course. But, especially Jeff Van Gundy.
Right?
You know, I mean, He shot down my 13 in 35 seconds, so.
Come on.
Yeah. and we won the game.
And you won the game. Yeah.
But, just... I mean, there's some positives to take from this. Don't do it again, right? Mm. I mean, this is a game that they should learn from. You go to San Antonio, you That's win the it. Game. Right. In San Antonio, it's a tough place for a young team to come in there and get a victory.
Right.
They ended up doing that. And you go back home, so you come off this emotional high, and you come back home and lose to the Bulls, who's struggling right now. You can't allow that to happen. So they have to the Spurs were in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But anyways, you can't come off of a high like that playing against San Antonio Spurs, and then the Bulls come in and you have this type of letdown. So it is something that they can learn from this.
There was no positive in that night other than the fact that he can use this as an example moving forward. Like you said, T-Mac, if they have a back-to-back where they have a very good team and they win, then you sit here as like, okay, if we lose by five in overtime, if we struggle because of foul trouble, but to go out against a lesser team and get blown out by 20,
right.
This is a teaching tool that he can use moving forward. But in that moment, there was nothing positive. I agree with him.
I mean, there's two things to remember here. First of all, this is a young team.
Very young.
And this is what we expected. This is why even though they've got good talent on this team and good coaching, their over-under for this year wasn't sky high. They weren't expected to make the playoffs because you have nights like this when you're a young team. The other thing to remember, of course, is they are missing John Collins, and we'll be missing him for the next 24 games. And we are eventually, I mean, Trae Young came back against the Spurs, so it was a big emotional game for him, and he's so crazy talented. They're going to win games even when John Collins is out. But they're going to lose games because they don't have John's presence, and he's a big part of that team. And we've seen three young players who have been suspended for PEDs over the last four or five months.
So what's going on with these boys?
Something to keep in mind. Coming up, we will discuss how Ben Simmons' shoulder injury will affect the Sixers. Is it time to worry in Philadelphia? Tip off your weekend with our NBA Friday matchup on ESPN and the ESPN. Richard, it's your guy, Kevin Love, leading the Cavs against Bradley Beal and the Wizards in D.C.
Such a phenomenal
Two of the biggest trade baits out there.
Bradley Beal cannot be traded because of the time that he signed his contract. He's got to wait until the summer to be traded.
That was not smart, Bradley.
Two of the richest guys out there. How about that? Welcome back to The Jump. I'm just going to ignore Tracy and keep talking through. We are now joined by our insider, the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Mr. Brian Windhorst. Welcome. I want to get right into it. Ben Simmons did not return for the second half Wednesday night at Utah because of what the team called a sprained AC joint in his right shoulder. He will be reevaluated today. Tracy, are the Sixers in trouble if Simmons has to miss any extended time?
Nope. In the Eastern Conference, they're fine. Al Horford, Joel Embiid, they're going to carry the load. I don't see him missing significant amount of time. I mean, I remember early in the season, I dealt with a torn labrum, and you talk about painful.
Yep.
I have to go through the season, and I'm a shooter, a scorer.
Say it.
Ben Simmons is not that, right? So he doesn't have, and it's on his non.
Every injury so Tracy's fine. Had.
That's true. It's this sad. Is why he needed load management.
I'm not worried about it at all. They got enough to hold down the fort in the Eastern Conference.
My only issue is how he injured it. That is a move that we see him do often, right? Mm-hmm. Because he's not a shooter. He's not a scorer. So he's typically, I got a smaller guy. I want to bang him in the post.
Sure.
If you can't bang somebody with that shoulder, then all of a sudden, like if this move is taken out of his game because he's afraid to injure it, we saw Anthony Davis not have guys pick him up with his left hand. He's
right.
Like, pick me up with my right. Because those are the issues. Like, if I can't do that to a player mm-hmm. out of risk of injury, it can affect their game. I don't think him missing time is going to affect them, but that injury could.
It depends on how you define trouble. I mean, are their title chances hurt if he misses a couple of weeks? No. But their backup point guard situation is not great. They're playing Josh Richardson, in my opinion, out of position at backup point guard. He's averaging as many turnovers as he is assists. It's actually one of the issues on the team that they need to address with before the injury. They lost T.J. McConnell in the offseason, mm-hmm. and then Raul Neto, and they haven't even been playing Trey Burke. They're not great at point guard depth. So short term, I do think it affects them. And remember, and I've never had a shoulder injury, but what I know from people who have, like Tracy, is that shoulder injuries heal slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're using the word sprain, which means that there's ligament damage.
Right.
So let's not freak out, but it's not something that he's going to come back from A-OK tomorrow.
Listen, Trey Burke is a quality backup for them. He can score the ball. He played for the Knicks and had a,
Don't reference Knicks on anybody's resume. Just don't do that.
You pretend you never played for the Knicks?
He does.
He does pretend.
He said, what? I played for the Knicks?
give other people that same courtesy.
All you Twitter people, send it to me.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Trey Burke is a solid backup.
I agree.
He should get some solid minutes and help out.
I want to move on to the second runner-up for MVP last season. That's a way to nice, fancy way to say someone came in third. Paul George.
Third's
he was
good.
Getting some shots up on the court before the game last night. Also, speaking of a torn labrum, look at that. Mm-hmm. Everything just wrapped up. Doc Rivers saying he's going to begin 5-on-5 work, quote, very, very soon. Remember, he had been targeting mid-November to come back. So, Richard, what changes when Paul George is added to a team that is already a title favorite?
Well, there's going to be an adjustment period, right? Yes, they're great, but this is something that is new for him. And then you have Kawhi and obviously this great core group of guys that made it to the postseason. We've already been watching how everybody else has been, you know, mm-hmm. gelling, right? How, you know, Bron and AD, what's going on in Philly. We've been watching all of this kind of movement. So I'm really excited to see what we believe to be the best team. Now, all of a sudden, maybe it gets there and they're, okay, they're still really, really good, but they're not far away the best team. I think they have an opportunity for that. So we'll see when he comes back.
I think short term, it means Landry Shamet will go to the bench and Paul will go into the starting lineup. He's one of the best two guards in the game. And I expect him to monitor his minutes early on. If he does come back next week, which is a possibility, hasn't been established. Mm-hmm. They do have a back-to-back next week. Guess what? Another back-to-back with a national TV game. Boy, aren't we looking forward to talking about that. I wouldn't be surprised if he does play in that back-to-back that he wouldn't play in both, as an
right.
example. So doesn't mean that, you know, I think they're going to, you know, slowly bring him in.
Yeah, I just think from a defensive standpoint, adding Paul George into this lineup with these guys, I mean, it's going to be phenomenal to watch. I see them shutting teams down to like 85, 90 points some nights just on the defensive end. So I look forward to that.
Paul George just told me that Scottie Pippen is who he modeled a lot of his game after. And I think that's an interesting comp, not just for how they play on the court, but these are guys who could definitely be the 1A player on so many teams in the NBA. I just mentioned he was an MVP finalist. But they like being what I would call a cohort, not really a number two necessarily, but being playing with another really good guy. And the way Scotty was very comfortable in the role he had with MJ, I think Paul George is going to be very comfortable in the role he has with Kawhi. I don't see them clashing or having the personalities, because you would see it on some teams, right? We saw Russ and KD. We've seen this on some teams. And I feel like the personality and who Paul George has sort of modeled himself after, he is going to slip right in chemistry-wise with those Clippers. And I think that's a big deal when you talk about time to gel and
they're gonna be a problem.
That stuff. According to the New York Post, James Dolan is being urged by an activist investor. That's what we call someone who is not necessarily doing a hostile takeover, but an activist investor, someone who already has stock in MSG, so he is already at the table, and he is encouraging Dolan to sell minority shares of the Knicks to potentially boost the team's value. Brian, he wants him to, what, spin off the sports teams from, like, Radio City Music Hall and the other things MSG owns, which would be the first step to selling the team, right?
Yeah, well, he's been at odds with some MSG investors and the board for a while. They criticized him last year for being overpaid and spending too much time on his Jazz than actually running the team. Yeah,
Dolan's been criticized?
Yeah.
I haven't caught that.
The thing about it is, like, what they're basically asking for is there to be a minority owner, to take on a minority owner. And the Knicks are worth somewhere between $3 and $4 billion. You can't be an owner, even in a minority share in the NBA, unless you have at least 1%. That means you're talking about an incredible amount of money to have no power. In this day and age, significant minority ownership, people only want to buy it if they have a path towards ownership. So while Knicks fans who want James Dolan to sell may get excited about this, I don't think this is necessarily going to result in what they're looking for.
Not happening.
He ain't going nowhere.
He's going nowhere. Look, if you didn't like the last iteration of the Windows whatever, Bill Gates ain't going nowhere. Like, he owns this. This is who he is.
Yes.
He's gotten it from his father. He didn't necessarily work to get to this spot. Got it from his daddy, and it's okay. That's why I'm 6'7". My dad was tall, right? Some things you just inherit.
The pressure's on, but he ain't going to crack.
He ain't going to crack. He ain't going nowhere.
By the way, can we throw up the values of those franchises again? Because I just want to remind everyone, when you complain about how much money the players make, look at what the owners have and how much those franchises have appreciated in the last 10 years.
Next time we have that graphic, I want you to put what they paid for those teams underneath.
Right?
Because the appreciation is absurd. Now, I understand that there's been years, but the buses, what they paid for the Lakers in, you know, the 70s and the, you know, I think it was in the 70s, it was like 100 million, 50 million. It was something crazy.
Even the Celtics on that list that changed hands relatively recently compared to, say, the buses or the Knicks franchise. They have made a tremendous amount of money.
The Warriors sold less than a decade ago for $450 million. If you were to throw in the arena that they now own,
because they own it.
That property is probably in the neighborhood of $4 to $5 billion.
Jeez.
That owning that. That's
so
in less than 10
if
years.
If any of you guys had $400 million sitting around 10 years ago, you should have put it into the Warriors is basically the lesson there. Coming up, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Doc Rivers was hot about not getting a coach's challenge go in his favor last night.
Yes, he was.
Is this whole coach's challenge thing actually working? We will look at the numbers next, so stick with us. All right, back on the jump, we showed you what Doc Rivers called an Eric Bledsoe flop earlier in the show. The officials called it an offensive foul on Lou Williams. This was with just 7 minutes left in the fourth. Doc Rivers challenged the call, but he was not happy with the result. It was not overturned. Here he is after the game.
Yeah, I know. That was awful. It was. It was not. They should have overturned it. That's why I hate the rule. Nobody wants to be wrong. I mean, let me just say that. And that was, you have to overturn that. I don't like the rule anyway. I said it up front, and now I like it even less.
Likes it even less. Coaches challenges have had about a 36% success rate so far this year. So would you say that number means it's actually working?
You heard Doc in the hallway last night.
I did. So we were standing in the hallway as Doc went into his press conference, and he just looked over at us and started yelling.
I would say Doc was calling on Rachel to use her bully pulpit to enact change.
Like, I do not like this. Did you see that? He was. If you thought he was hot when he was sitting at the press conference, I can tell you, I don't feel bad sharing. He was very hot in the hallway last night. What did you think?
I don't like it.
You don't like the challenge?
No, I don't like the challenge at all. I was watching the Rockets game last night, and there was a foul called on James Harden, right? So D'Antoni hit the challenge button.
Yeah.
Clearly the foul wasn't on James Harden, so they waved that off. Mm-hmm. But the ball went out on Golden State. Why is it a jump ball? I don't understand. If you're going to look at that, you wave off.
I guess because the whistle blew. And so,
right, so
inadvertent
like,
whistle.
Yeah.
What? Look.
No, it's always the jump ball after the challenge.
Right,
though.
But the idea is since you don't know what would have happened, if they make a call that's overturned, the idea is, I believe, that because then you're kind of going back in time to your alternate other reality where you don't know what happened, then it was sort of like, well, the ball was in play at that moment, and we don't know what happened.
In that moment, if it like went off somebody.
Earth 2
is just, what it's just
about.
One of those things that you're just looking at this. If that can't be overturned, if that specific play can't be overturned when we see it, he sees it, the referees are watching the exact same thing, and they're like, no, this play should not go back in time and not be an offensive foul, then Doc has a legitimate reason to be upset. And like, why are we doing this if this specific play can't be overturned?
Okay, so here's what I would say. First of all, mistakes happen. This is early in the process.
For sure.
I'm okay to give them, hey, that one got messed up, right?
Agreed.
Okay, let's see if this comes into play later in the year. I like that this exists because we've seen moments like in the NBA Finals. Was it Game 1 in the NBA Finals 2 years ago where it was the Cavs and the Warriors and that block charge call and all of that stuff that came out of it? And
you recall that?
I do recall that.
Right?
I do recall that.
So where it was sort of like, I like that there might have been sort of a way for Ty Lue in that moment to sort of say, okay, here's what's going on. I would like there to be an actual red flag. I don't understand why NFL coaches get one in their sock and NBA coaches don't. You're taking my fun away here. But 36% is actually, that tells me that we kind of need it because that means if more than a third of calls, and again, these aren't calls throughout the game because you would not challenge every call throughout the game, but a third of call, if a third of the calls that to the coach's eye are a little shaky are getting overturned, that tells me we need it.
This data shows that the fourth quarter, they're being a little bit tighter and changing the call.
Right.
Now, Doc has obviously a point with that play last night. It looked like Doc has a very good point. Whenever you're, what's different about this call is this is calling into the subjective rulings. The old replay system is the guy's foot on the line.
Right.
Did the shot get off before the buzzer? You know, that was, you know, generally black or white. You're never going to get 100% and you're never going to get everybody happy about it because it is subjective.
But
so the fact that we are making any sort of challenge, I think is actually a positive thing. But you have to go into the whole thing knowing that you're never going to make everybody happy.
I like that the NBA is a league where we don't say the officials are right no matter what. It's not like when you have in the end zone one guy doing this and one guy doing this, and they're like, it's God's law, it's correct. I do think that there may be some politics that get played, though, within teams. It puts pressure on coaches. Because if a guy in the third quarter comes back and says, I wasn't fouled, you challenge that. And what if it's, I don't know, James Harden, someone on your team who sort of has that kind of clout, and the guy feels like, the coach feels like he has to use that then, and then he doesn't have it for later, or why is he using it for one guy and not another guy? We'll have to see if all that.
Well, and the analytics are coming, right? The analytics are coming. Well, this referee doesn't overturn fouls for us, and we lose 100% of the fouls when that do it.
I can't see any organization doing something like that. While we are on the topic of officiating, last night there were three separate games where a flagrant foul was called for a reckless closeout, or in other words, not giving the shooter proper room to land. This rule's been on the books for three seasons. We've talked about it to varying degrees as it's come up. Do you think the NBA is cracking down on this, Richard?
Well, I think they should crack down on it because look at this. You gotta give him space to land. And with more threes being shot, this is happening.
This is happening
at a greater frequency. Like, you used to fade away from 40 feet, so that didn't bother you. You just step further back. I didn't have that. I had to be at the line, or you've been just inside.
So how you contest shots now? I mean, you can't contest shots now because a lot of these guys, when they shoot, they come forward. How am I supposed to go straight up when they coming forward and laying down on my... That's not my...
How are defensive linemen supposed to sack quarterbacks anymore? I don't even know. Look, but come on.
Is that a foul?
Yes, that's a foul. You got to get... His feet have to be able to come down, Mac. Look at that. Now there's some embellishment. On, there's some embellishment. Really? But if your feet touch my feet... Look at this. Where is he supposed to land?
I get that.
Okay.
Because he was in his space.
Right, okay.
But the other... He was on the side of him.
If James Harden is... If they are indeed calling this
more... Oh, yeah.
James Harden smiles even wider because he could maybe get five free throws in a possession.
This is why he's going to average 40, I'm telling y'all. This is the reason why he's averaging 14 threes. He's going to get fouled on four of them every night.
I have to say, I haven't seen every game this year. I don't remember being called any other
three
time
times
this
in
year.
One night.
So I don't know if it's probably, it feels like an anomaly.
But players do this. I remember, and I hopefully we have the clip, where Bruce Bowen did it to Vince Carter. He was cooking him.
That was blatant.
That was blatant. Now watch this. Vince had 39, and look at that. Put his foot all the way out. Almost got his back
foot.
Vince was like, Vince chased him down the court. Watch this. He led with his foot.
Come on.
That's intentional.
Look at Vince.
Yeah, and Vince knew because he was like, what did I do? Bruce, we know he had 39 and three quarters with no free throws. He was bucketing y'all to death. And you were just like, let me try and get him out of the game.
This was what happened. So the rule is there because of Zaza Pachulia coming down, right, on Kawhi Leonard and knocking him out of that playoff series that the Spurs thought that they were going to win. And obviously the fact that the Spurs were the ones waving their flag and saying, I can't believe that you would do something like this. Bruce Bowen was brought up at that time by the rest of the NBA that this organization possibly didn't have a...
From the ones that
I know that was different, but you're trying to prevent those, so you want guys to get away from the closer ones.
Listen, I mean, if this was in our day, I'm telling you, myself, Kobe, Paul, we would have averaged what James is doing right now.
I don't doubt
that. Contest
and I had to guard you guys, so I'm glad these rules do not exist.
The other thing is that James Hart, one of the things he's pioneered is he positions himself to fall.
Right.
So that he doesn't sprain his ankle.
Yeah.
He works on his body and wears padding and, frankly, strengthens his butt so that he can put his feet out so that he can fall and not sprain his ankle.
Yeah. He's
because
drawing the foul.
He's a wizard. He's a genius at this kind of stuff.
That's not a foul, but you're still in their landing zone, though, Mac.
We just don't contest threes no more. Just let everybody shoot the damn ball. Don't even play defense on the perimeter no more. Like, just come on, man.
You give those Giannis shots from last night.
Yeah, just let him shoot.
Yeah, okay.
Let him shoot.
Let's hear from Zion Williamson because he spoke today for the first time since his injury was announced to the public. Here is what he said.
No way.
It's a long season. This isn't like college or something where it's 30 games. It's 82 games, so I don't really see a need to rush back. I'm just rehabbing, man. You feel me? It's like it's getting stronger day by day. You know, the trainers and stuff are telling me day by day it's getting stronger, and I can feel the difference each day.
See, they have the same flat hair top, same hairline. I'm the only one that thinks that. Okay.
Zion's return timeline was 6 to 8 weeks. Some people were like, oh, does this mean he's going to be back by the end of November? He's not going to be back by the end of November, people. You would maybe want him to be back before Christmas, right? Like kind of a few week or so leading up to Christmas. What do you think, Richard, he's going to be like when he returns? Do you think he'll be all tentative now or...
No, I think he's going to be aggressive. People in the NBA, they're not worried about his conditioning. There's been so much in conditioning because of size. He just has a size to him that is built like most football players. I think it's his weight that you have issues with. And it's not that his body fat is too high. He's just at 8% body fat. He's literally going to have to spend his entire career trying to shrink his body in order to
you
be able to maintain.
You just said on television he looks like he ate Jaylen Brown.
What? Yeah, because they look alike. It is just like if Jaylen Brown had like an Iron Man mask, he would like go into that, right? Like that's what the Iron Man body would look like.
Chain to Dave,
bro. I'm saying, look at him, he's huge. But this is what you gotta do.
I mean, I expect him to come back and be who he is before he got injured, right? I mean, he has a great motor. It's just physical and athletic, and I just expect him to be who he is. I mean,
dominant
he's young,
monster.
Young and recovering fast.
Tracy, you know what it's like to play with knee issues, though. I mean, you know, this was a debridement procedure, which means he had part of his meniscus taken off, which means he can come back and play this year, which is good. But it also means that he's at risk of having further injury. So there's two things going on here. They're rehabbing him from this injury that he just had to try to get him back and get him healthy. And there's people trust me, the Pelicans are working their tails off on trying to figure out what they can do, as Richard pointed out, what they can do long term to try to lessen the load and make sure he doesn't have more.
David Griffin has addressed this a little bit, that they're trying to figure out how that he can have leaner muscle is what David Griffin called it, right? He said, you know, he when he works out and lifts weights, he gets bulk like that. And so they're working on how to give him leaner muscle. They hired a whole new training staff there this year. Excellent, excellent staff. Came from the Phoenix Suns. So
he's in shape. He's in shape. No, he's in great condition to do all the things that he needs to do.
You can't be 285.
You just can't be 285 and play this game for that long over 82 games.
260.
Yeah.
You got to do it. And that just means he's going to have to focus on it every single day.
There you go. Brian, thank you so much for coming in with us. These guys will stick around. You need to stick around because Kemba Walker makes his return to Charlotte tonight. And Scary Terry is going up against his old squad. Hey, look, tomorrow on ESPN in the app. We're just excited about our ESPN programming here on set. We have the 8th annual Armed Forces Classic honoring America's heroes. Washington taking on number 16 Baylor at Alaska Airlines Arena in Anchorage. Shout out Anchorage. 9:30 Eastern.
Welcome back, college basketball.
Alaska.
Yes.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
All right, guys, it's crunch time here on The Jump. College Hoops is back. One of the top prospects, Cole Anthony, son of our friend Greg Anthony, dropping 34 points, 11 boards, 5 assists in his college debut. And shout out to Scottie Pippen Jr. He had 7 points and 6 assists in his Vanderbilt debut. What do you think of those guys?
I think it's awesome. You know, again, we've seen it for 10-plus years, 20 years, guys playing after their father. But this is awesome. To come out and have that type of performance at North Carolina, you can see, look, Pops is almost in tears, man. That makes me feel special watching your son do that at a school like that.
One day, RJ, we're going to be sitting up there.
That's right. It's going to be you guys with your sons, your daughters.
While watching my kid play lacrosse at Yale. It's going to be awesome.
With paper airplanes. Look, shoot or shoot. Bradley Beal went cold last night, shooting only 1 for 12 from 3 in the loss to the Pacers. And after the game, he said, I don't really care about percentages. Got to go out there and keep shooting. You buy this?
Matt got this.
Amen. Shoot or shoot. Keep shooting. I mean, James Harden went 2 for 19 this year. So 1 for 12, you had a pretty good
night. That's been 0 for 12 before.
Plus, if anyone has the green light on any team in the NBA this year, it is Bradley Beal on the Washington Wizards.
Bradley was like, this is why I signed here.
This is why I signed that contract. So I can do this as much as I want. Yeah. Go for it, Bradley Beal. The Celtics guys are at the Hornets tonight, so you know what that means. We have two players with big motivation against their former squads. I love this season in the NBA. Every game is a revenge game for someone. That's what happens when half the league changes teams. Kemba leading the Hornets is their leading scorer in franchise history, now leading the Celtics. They had the chance to offer him a Supermax this season. They declined. Terry Rozier clashing with the Celtics last season about his touches and playing time. He has not been shy about talking about it. So who do you think, Trace, has more to prove against their former team, Scary Terry or Kemba Walker?
Well, you know what? I'm taking a different angle on this. Kemba's going to be fine in the Celtics. They're going to be fine. I see them being top four in the Eastern Conference. But Terry Rozier, he has some pressure on him. The reason he has pressure on him is because the guy that's behind him, Devontae, Graham out of Kansas, second-year guy. He's averaging 17.6 assists. Now, you paid Terry all this money, but you got a backup that's on his second year being more productive than him. It could get a little dicey here in the next year or two.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Kemba either. I think Scary Terry has more to worry about from the standpoint of, like, how he left Boston, how he felt like, hey, I could have replaced Kyrie. I could be that guy. Yeah. Why do that? So now he gets to go and replace Kemba Walker and trying to improve on what Kemba Walker did. So there's just more on Terry to prove. Plus, you got a young boy on your heels. How do you handle that?
And Kemba spoke a little bit in Charlotte today. He was very generous about the fans. He said he expected a really nice reception.
Yeah, absolutely. An ovation.
He left because they didn't want to pay him. Can't be mad at him for that. Our League Pass game of the night, Heat, Suns, both teams off to surprising 5-2 starts. Heat rookie Tyler Hero told the Miami Herald he has modeled his game after Devin Booker. We have reached an age where people are modeling their games after Devin Booker, who I believe is still, what, only 23?
Yeah.
Quote, all I watch is Devin. Both played at Kentucky, of course. Booker was 4 years ahead. Do you think this is the right comp?
I see it, yes.
I can see it. I think there are better two guards, Klay Thompson, that you could model your game after, but Booker is talented and he's balling this year. Good for him.
Thanks to all these guys. Wait till you see
Gil,
what we have tomorrow.
Gil's going to be here tomorrow.
Phoenix is coming tomorrow.
This is going to be must-see TV.
Yes.
Y'all got my guy Gil coming through.
Great show.